Well, that's the United States Air Force Band singing the Pledge of Allegiance, introducing another episode of Conservative Casual Friday with your show host, Andrew Harrod. And we want to start off with the Pledge of Allegiance there, thinking of schools. We probably all of you will remember saying this Pledge of Allegiance at each opening day, opening of the school day. Well, today we want to talk about Virginia schools. A lot of radical agendas are being indoctrinated in children there. And to discuss this issue and others today on this weekly Blog Talk radio show, we have Maria Kaplan from the Arlington Parent Coalition, a local resident who wants to inform us as to what is going on in the public schools in Arlington, Virginia, and across the nation. Maria Kaplan, thanks for joining us today.
Hi, Andrew. Thank you so much for inviting me. I appreciate the chance to get to come on your show and talk to people about what we've been doing and what's going on around the nation.
All right. Well, discuss for us, what is the Arlington Parent Council? How and when did it get started? And what is your background?
All right. Well, we're the Arlington Parent Coalition, and we started our coalition in March of last year, March of 2019. I'm a parent here in Arlington County, Virginia, and I have three kids who are school age. This year, they are in 7th, 10th, and 12th grades. And in February of 2019, a friend of mine, also a parent here in Arlington, called me and said, hey, I was looking around the APS, Arlington Public Schools website, and I was looking for some summer school information, and I came across this working group meeting that's happening tonight, and it's on transgender student policy. She said, I've never heard anything about this. Will you come with me and go to that meeting? So I said, oh, that sounds kind of important. So we went, and we were just amazed at what we heard. About a dozen people sat around a table talking about what they wanted to see in this transgender student policy. There were students, there were teachers, there were parents, there were activists from a local transgender activism group here in Arlington. And the takeaway from that meeting was that parents are a threat. And the school needs to do all these policy changes to support transgender kids and keep parents who might not agree with it out of the loop as much as possible. And my friend and I were just floored. And the next week we sat down around a table with some other parents and we said, we need to be involved in this discussion. Nobody around that table had anything critical or any voices of caution. They were all full steam ahead. Let's get this policy passed. And we said, we want to be invited to the table. So we started organizing parents to be heard. And unfortunately, we really weren't. But we began the coalition as a way to inform parents and to empower parents to speak to the schools and to get their voices heard. As I said, I'm a mom, a local mom. I'm a teacher by background. And so much of this shocked me, both from the perspective of having been a teacher, having worked in education, and having kids in the schools, that this is not okay, severing the parent-child relationship if the school doesn't like what the parents are teaching. And I'm afraid that's just what's happening now.
Well, what sort of
I'm sorry, Andrew, you cut out. I'm having a hard time hearing you.
Can you hear me now?
Can you repeat the last question that you asked me?
Oh, yes. What sort of things are being taught in public schools? At what levels? For example, on your website, at Arlington Parent Coalition, you discuss, for example, that there's this reading to kindergarteners by transgender activists, Gaz, Nebraska. What other things are what are parents learning about what's going on in school?
Yeah, what we're seeing in schools right now, unfortunately, is a lot of activism toward things that not all families and not all parents are really going to be on board with. And the incident that you mentioned, the I Am Jazz reading, that occurred also in February of 2019, where a transgender activist, as well as the president of the National Education Association, came to an elementary school here and read I Am Jazz, which is a transgender storybook, to two classes of kindergartners without parental permission and without most people knowing it was happening. That sort of activist agenda towards sex ed and sexuality and gender is what we're seeing happening a lot across all grade levels.
And so you mentioned, so are the schools telling the parents about this? You indicate that they're really trying to sort of get in under radar and not let the parents know.
Yeah, that particular event, they sent a lengthy letter home the Friday before it happened. It took place, I believe, on a Thursday. They sent a letter home on Friday, and, you know, parents are inundated with stuff. Who reads, you know, stuff that comes home on a Friday? But it was a very lengthy three-paragraph letter, very flowery. We have this wonderful experience for your kids. We have a guest speaker. They're going to read a book for National Read Book Week. It's going to be very about diversity and inclusion. And only once in the center paragraph did they include the word transgender. And there was no mention of any chance to opt out of it. Most parents would have just skimmed that and not really, you know, gotten into the weeds of what they were saying there. And the interesting thing is they only sent it home in English. And everything else that comes home from that school goes home both in English and Spanish because there's a large Hispanic community at the school. And they only sent it in English with no opt-out. It's very much, we want to slip the stuff under the radar because if parents aren't on board with it, the parents are wrong and they need to be circumvented.
And how are kids in the schools responding to this? To these lessons and these activities, are any kids, you know, really being disturbed by what's being taught to them?
Yeah, after that episode, the I Am Jazz reduction with parents, and that didn't just happen. That happened at hundreds around the nation during that particular reading. It was promoted by the National Education Association. But when I talked to parents, they say those young kids who are hearing those things, they come home scared and confused. One child just didn't even want to talk about it with his parents. And the dad told me he just clearly was anxious about it because the child is being told two different things by two trusted individuals. You know, the parents one thing, teaching the child another thing, and forcing that child to choose who he believes. Do I believe my mom and dad, or do I believe the school? That's a terrible position to put a child in. Another parent I talked to said that their child was scared to go to the doctor now because during that presentation, the child was told the doctor made a mistake. The doctor thought I was a boy when I was born and then found out later that I was actually a girl. Well, the young kids are terrified they're going to go to the doctor and the doctor's going to say, oh, I made a mistake. You're not really, you know, boy or girl. You're actually the opposite. Older kids, what's really happening is that division between do I believe my parents or do I believe the school? Kids who are in the tween and early teen ages, that is the time that they are starting to leave the nest and move into the forest. And their peers and the people outside the home are becoming more important to them than their family. And that's a necessary transition. It's part of the maturation, part of the growing up process. But when the school is stepping in at that time and saying, yeah, your parents are completely wrong. We're your friends. We're supporting you. We're the ones who have the real facts. That does so much damage to the parent-child relationship. And I think that's intentional, unfortunately. I'd like to say that it's not. And I do want to say there are many, many wonderful teachers in the schools who are not participating in this, are not on board with this. But unfortunately, at the administrative level, this is the direction it's going. And I find it very nefarious in terms of what it's doing to kids and families.
Well, can students in particular in the schools, do they feel like they have an ability to oppose these agendas and criticize this, or do they feel that, you know, this is just something they just simply have to obey and go along with this program?
Well, that's an interesting question. I tell you, my daughter, when she was in fifth grade, the topic of transgenderism came up in the classroom. And she said, I was really proud of her. She said, my family doesn't believe that this is a healthy thing for somebody to do, to try to transgender. Yeah. And the teacher said, oh, no, it's fine. We have to support this. It's good. And no other students backed her up. She came home and told me I was the only one in the class who didn't think that that was okay. I doubt that's true. I think there were probably other kids who did, but did not feel like they could say that because they saw what happened to her. She said something and, you know, she was not backed up. And unfortunately, when you have in the older levels, and I'm saying, I know of this happening in several high schools. I don't know if it's happening in middle schools, but I would suspect it is. Schools that have GSA clubs, or what are known as gender sexuality alliances or gay straight allies, those kids are going into classes, health classes. In one case here, they came into a high impact language training class, which is for new immigrant students who don't have great English skills yet. They came into that class and did it in Spanish, and they're giving presentations on sex and gender. They're providing sex ed in these classes. And what's happening is these kids are maybe a year or two older than the kids in the class that they're teaching to. Because these GSA kids are being granted authority by the teacher to come in and teach, and there's a really strong peer pressure component to it, these are now the cool kids. Being LGBT makes you cool and edgy and popular. Who at 13, 14, 15 is going to stand up and say, no, I disagree with that, when the teacher has permitted it, the students are affirming it, the NEA is saying this is what's supposed to happen. The NEA has adopted the peer sales techniques. If you've ever been invited to somebody's house for a party where they sell you Tupperware candles or something, that's leveraging peer pressure to make sales. They're doing that now in schools. They have opted that sales model, and they call it peer-led sex ed. And the NEA is saying this is what should happen. And the effect that it has is creating peer pressure to accept this and not criticize it.
Well, it seems to me all of the agendas introduced the show here with the Pledge of Allegiance. All of these agendas seem to contradict sort of values that are taught, like, you know, the Pledge of Allegiance says under God. And if you think about the Declaration of Independence on the 4th of July, that spoke of the laws of nature and of nature's God. I mean, the philosophy of the United States has always been this sort of natural law philosophy, that you have objective reality and objective facts about humanity and human nature. This seems, is anyone noticing a fundamental contradiction here?
Well, people are noticing it if they're looking for it. Unfortunately, and I'm no theologian or philosopher, but what I'm reading about postmodern thought really seems to coalesce around what's happening in the schools. It used to be that we recognized that physical reality was true, what is physical, you know, science is true, what you can test, what you can see. And the understanding at that time was that your body, your physical body is reality. If your mind doesn't align with that, there's a problem with your mind. That's why they used to call it gender dysphoria. It was classified as a mental, something that needed to be treated psychologically. But now postmodern thought, which has said that there is no such thing as ultimate truth. If you think it, then it's true. Which, by the way, I heard a great apologist say, if somebody tells you there is no such thing as truth, he is asking you not to believe him. And that just captures it, because we cannot apply a test of is this true to do I think it's true. But that's what's happening here. People are saying your truth is your truth. All truth is true. And if your mind feels that it is in the wrong body, your mind is not the problem. Your body is. We need to get you puberty blockers. We need to get you cross-sex hormones. We need to get you a double mastectomy. We need to do what's necessary to correct the body. And so that very much goes against science. It goes against reality. But as far as our American values, I would say the primary place where this violates our American values is with the First Amendment and our freedom of speech. Because preferred pronouns and being called what you want to be called is now the litmus test for are you treating transgender people correctly. And so a physical girl, a biological girl who thinks she's a boy, you are now required to call her a he. And that just flies in the face of what most of us understand as reality.
Yeah, I mean, this is really interesting that, you know, public schools are engaging in this formation with this ideology, all coming out of, you know, what's been identified as cultural Marxism and ideologies developed by people from the Frankfurt School in Germany and emigres mm-hmm. who came over after World War II to the United States, people like William Reich and Herbert Marcuse. That this is all now becoming being pushed upon kids in a public institution, sort of a captured by mm-hmm. a private interest. How are school mm-hmm. personnel, like teachers, responding to these agendas?
We talked to a number of teachers, and again, there are some wonderful, wonderful teachers out there. And not all teachers are on board with this, but unfortunately, they stand to lose their jobs if they push back against it. There's a case right now down in, I believe it's West Point, Virginia. Peter Vlaming was a French teacher, a very experienced French teacher. I think he's in his late 40s or early 50s. He's been teaching for a long time. He simply chose not to use pronouns with a student who had transgendered from, you know, she was a female who wanted to be perceived as a male. And he used her preferred name, but he was uncomfortable using the wrong pronoun. And so he chose simply not to use pronouns. And he was fired for that. He's pushing back on the school system. It'll be interesting to see what the outcome of that is. But, you know, people see that, and teachers know that if they push back, they're going to encounter a lot of resistance, and they're going to very likely lose their jobs. So teachers are scared to speak out. We have provided on our page, ArlingtonParentCoalition.org, a report form that teachers or parents can report to us with any degree of anonymity that they're comfortable, what they've seen, what's happening to them. And we've gotten a few reports that are really kind of heartbreaking.
So has any disciplinary action yet occurred in the Arlington Public Schools, similar to what you discussed in West Point, Virginia?
I'm unfamiliar with anything if it has.
Yeah, but that's a real, of course, a real looming threat, a looming example. I mean, I imagine a lot of people really sort of walking on eggshells, wondering what's going to happen next. I mean, particularly now that, you know, you've had the Supreme Court with its Bostock decision, just sort of rewriting out of whole cloth sexual discrimination legislation. I mean, that's going to open up a whole can of worms, I should presume. Well, how are elected officials like school boards and city councils reacting to this these things going on in public schools?
Well, we were really, really disappointed with our school board when we first became acquainted with this issue back in February and March of 2019. The very first thing we did here in Arlington was organize parents to go in and talk to all of the school board members. And in the beginning, a couple of the five, I think two of the five school board members, we felt were listening, understood the concerns. I felt was said, but by the end of the process, we had even lost them as potential allies. At one point, we were told this is happening. You hear all the slogans, you know, being on the right side of history and all of that. And I will say at the final meeting where the transgender student policy was decided upon, one of the school board members read aloud a number of the questions that our parents had sent her and said, these are the concerns that we have about this policy. How do you decide who is truly experiencing gender dysphoria and just wants to present as the other gender? How do you distinguish that from the boy who just thinks it'd be really funny to say he's a girl today and get to go in the girls' bathroom? How are you going to keep girls safe on sports teams if physically biological boys are playing with them? We had about 40 questions, and she read a bunch of those out loud, and I was very, very grateful to her for doing that, and I told her that. But in the end, it made no difference. They are concerned with culture, with staying on the cutting edge of the culture, being approved by the culture. I can't say that I really think they're concerned with what's best for students, unfortunately.
Well, I can remember, with some of these activities, these LGBT presentations, there have been some real scandals, like way back in 2000, it was, two decades back, there was a case up in Massachusetts at Tufts University where there was a conference for high school students, and it turned into what was called the Fishgate scandal, where you can read about it online, but all sorts of really just disturbing, lewd, shocking behavior was homosexual behavior was presented to kids. The event was recorded and ended up the individuals who were involved in presenting that were fired from the education association or the school system in Massachusetts. Has anything like that happened in the Arlington public schools?
Well, I think some of these curricula that are being used and some of these presentations that are being made are egregiously unacceptable. I don't know of any case where there's been any particular behaviors like that. Nobody has told me about any. But when you're presenting, you know, the gender unicorn to kindergartners, which is, you know, a unicorn that they use to say, oh, you know, gender is on a spectrum and sexual identity is on a spectrum. You know, that's 10 years ago, you know, you would have gotten fired for presenting that. Now you're applauded for it. There's a school system, a school here in Arlington that has kids in 6th through 12th grade. And their GSA club meets once a week with no adult present. They don't need to have an adult there in the room. And so it's 6th through 12th graders talking about sex and gender by themselves for an hour. And one of my kids went to that club a couple of times and came home with some vocabulary words that shocked me that no 12-year-old, you know, should know what bestiality is. But she did after attending that. So the school systems are setting themselves up for dangerous activities. I think we're going to see more and more, you know, we're going to see assaults in bathrooms. We're going to see kids, girls hurt on sports fields. Anytime parents are separated from the process, kids are put into danger. And that's really been the focus of Arlington Parent Coalition. Our two focus areas are making sure that parents are respected in their kids' education and health decisions, and making sure that all kids are safe at school. Those are the two things we do. And across cultures and across time, the primacy of the parent-child relationship has always been recognized and respected. Parents are kids' best protector and guide. And anytime somebody tries to sever that or come between it, except in rare examples of extreme neglect or abuse, outside of extreme neglect or abuse, anytime somebody tries to come between the child and parent relationship, it's for a nefarious reason, and it ends up in the victimization of the child. And I think we're going to be seeing more and more of that as these policies become more and more mainstream. And parents, no kidding, lose custody of their own children for being unwilling to come along with this agenda and say, yes, I'm fine with my daughter having surgery to become a boy. Yes, I'm in favor of my son, you know, having his genitals surgically removed to try to make him a girl. Parents have lost custody of their children for being unwilling to capitulate to that agenda.
And, you know, this raises interesting questions, particularly about, say, individuals of religious background. I mean, you can think of, for example, Muslims, say, you know, the whole idea of Muslim females wearing a veil, a hijab. I mean, that's supposed to represent a certain a modesty standard. And yet, if some Muslim female student is going to these schools, that all of these agendas and indoctrination simply flies in the face of any such modesty standards. Have there been any, how are religious individuals, say Catholics or Muslims or others, reacting to this kind of behavior in the schools?
Well, that's one of the reasons that our organization has focused primarily on parent rights and kids protection and not getting into any particular religious beliefs, because we do have member parents from a variety of different religious backgrounds. You know, whether no religious background at all, or Muslim or Catholic or conservative, evangelical, we have a wide group of parents. And so that's why we focus on the rights as opposed to the religious aspect of it. But that is a serious problem, because, again, of the cognitive dissonance that's being forced upon these kids, that mom and dad are teaching what they believe is the truth about life and about where life came from, what life means, the best way to live a healthy, righteous, productive life. And then the school is teaching something quite different, and that contradicts what's being taught at home. And it definitely is not a healthy thing for a kid to be day after day after day having to navigate that minefield of what school is saying vice what parents are saying. And we have religious freedom laws in this country specifically so no one is compelled to live contrary to their conscience. That is not being practiced in the schools right now. I had an interesting interaction yesterday on Facebook. It started out as a political discussion, and within a few minutes, it turned to the LGBTQ question. And I asked a very simple question, one that I mentioned to you earlier. How do you tell the difference between someone who is truly suffering gender dysphoria and somebody who is trying to be predatory and use that as a way to gain access to women's vulnerable spaces? And immediately two people called me a bigot and a hater and a TERF. TERF means trans exclusive radical feminist. It's become a slur for anybody who doesn't go along, or anyone who questions, anyone who doesn't celebrate the trans agenda. And after that interaction, I thought, how interesting, this group of fanatics, of transgender fanatics, are behaving religiously just like they have historically complained about religious people who won't look at, who won't entertain questions about their faith, who won't look at facts, who are dogmatic in their sort of platitudes. And I thought, I think this has become almost a state-sponsored religion, this transgender or transgender ideology. And I also, I would like to say, too, the transgender activists have hitched their wagon to the homosexuality activism. The LGB, the lesbian, gay, and bisexual community have done a lot. They've worked very hard to achieve, you know, marriage equality through Obergefell. They've worked very hard to be, you know, legitimized and respected, and they've had a lot of success in that area. The transgender group is a very different group. Their goals are quite different from the LGB, and so I'm always uncomfortable lumping those together. I don't like the LGBTQ because it's actually two very different groups. It's very cool. And I don't find the LGB portion to be threatening to the degree that the transgender queer part is very aggressively trying to force the rest of us to not just accept, but to applaud, celebrate, and in many cases, transgender our kids to an opposite sex in order to further their goals for political political acceptance, if you will.
Yeah, there has indeed been actually a conflict among you know, gays on the one hand, lesbians say on the one hand, and transgender genders, these gender dysphoria, you know, lesbians saying, hey, look, you know, we don't want, you know, men coming coming into our private space and so forth, and this is really a different issue. But it's interesting you say that. So your group does indeed have a wide variety of people who are coming together to protect these parent-child relationships, and from, say, Muslims or Catholics or evangelicals. So it is indeed a broad base, or even people with no faith at all.
Yeah. We have had a couple of people. One man came to one of our early meetings, and a friend brought him and told us he's very uncomfortable with conservative Christians. He's scared this is going to be a pray the gay away kind of meeting. And after the meeting, he came up and talked to us. He was much more relaxed. He's an atheist. He said, I'm just concerned about truth. I'm concerned about what my kids are being told about their bodies. And I said, yeah, that's what we're concerned about, too. We really believe in religious freedom. We believe parents should be respected about what they're teaching their kids, whether they're teaching their kids about Allah or teaching their kids about Buddha or teaching their kids about evolution. Parents should, in a religiously free society, have the right to teach their kids anything that is not harming them. And the school should not ever have the authority to come in and say, no, we don't agree with that. We're going to teach your kids what we want them to learn. And at that very first meeting that I talked about earlier, the working group meeting that I went to, the director of counseling for APS said at the meeting, we have to help parents along, parents who aren't quite there yet. We need to help them along. And I thought that was the most arrogant thing I'd ever heard an educator say. That assumes that she knows better than all the rest of the parents in APS what's good for their children. And she doesn't know most of those children, and she doesn't know most of those families. And that was a very arrogant position to take. And that's probably the first thing that launched me into something has to be done to push back on this, to touch families.
And you know, it strikes me as interesting. We were talking here about this new ideology. It strikes me as strange that, you know, people say that they don't want to say the Pledge of Allegiance as we introduce this show here. You know, you're going back to the Supreme Court case during World War II with the Jehovah's Witnesses that they didn't want to say the Pledge of Allegiance. And now you have, for example, all sorts of people, athletes and so forth, you know, kneeling during the national anthem at sports games and so forth, that anyone can say whatever they want about the American flag or about America. You can burn the American flag or whatever, but it seems, as we're discussing here, that you may not disrespect, say, this LGBT rainbow flag, that now this ideology is something that cannot be questioned. So you can condemn or criticize America all you want, but you can't criticize this new postmodernist ideology.
Yeah, they've done an amazing PR job. I mean, they've really done a great job marketing this, because it's been marketed under equity, inclusion, and diversity. And that's the Holy Trinity. That is the Holy Trinity of the culture now, is equity, diversity, and inclusiveness. But that does not extend to anyone who disagrees with anything that the culture prefers. If you do not go along, you will be silenced. You know, your voice will be silenced. You will be deplatformed. Yeah, it's very hypocritical for all of the cries of tolerance and inclusion. That's, you know, as long as we agree with you, as long as we prefer the things that you say, then you will be included and you will be tolerated and we will like your diversity. But there's a very strong anti-religious attitude behind this, but primarily, I think, a very strong anti-Christian attitude toward this. You can't criticize Islam. You can't criticize, you know, someone who's Sikh for their beliefs, but Christianity is fair game.
Yeah, that raises interesting questions. Has there been any difference? Like, have you noticed, say, any Muslims, say, criticizing these agendas, and then that turns into a situation where maybe a Muslim can get away with expressing criticism because no one wants to criticize Islam? So it becomes like a question of hierarchy of sort of victimhood or preferences of you know, which group is favored, you know, Muslims or LGBT individuals.
Yeah. Oh, that's interesting. And I like the way you said that—a hierarchy of oppression. I seen that. I will say that the more marginalized of a group that you belong to, the more you're likely to be heard, I think. But I can also say that we struggle to get people to speak out. It's very hard to get people to put their names to something because it is such a dangerous environment in which to do it. You know, our organization, we have a leadership team, but only two of us have our names in public because, you know, our other members have jobs to protect. A couple people have said, I'm afraid for my name to be known, because I'm afraid my kids will be targeted in school, you know, for abuse or for bullying. And I think those are valid arguments. So we hear a lot from parents who agree with us and say, you know, I want to do something. What can I do? But they're scared to put themselves out there. And I understand that. And I don't criticize them for that because it's real. It's a real thing. So we're not having lots and lots of people standing up and speaking out, out of a fear of retaliation.
Yeah, that raises an interesting question. Has there occurred any backlash against parents? Like, I guess, you know, you could have things like, you know, sort of similar to what you talked about on Facebook. You could have incidents of, like, say, doxing or something. You know, someone would want to, you know, put out all sorts of information about any parent who's speaking out and, you know, put out their address and their name. And, you know, then also, I guess that could raise issues, say, would someone maybe be fired from their job at work because they got known as some sort of opponent of these agendas? Mm-hmm. Has that occurred?
That has not happened with our organization here in Arlington. We're still pretty small. You know, we're kind of small potatoes when it comes to the larger issues. But I'm connected with a lot of people who are working on this around the globe. And absolutely, the people that I'm working with have had their names doxed. I don't know if you're familiar with Maya Forstater, and she's in the UK. She was a tax analyst, and she tweeted from her own account. I can't remember verbatim what she said, but basically, you know, a man cannot be a woman. That was it. She was fired from her job for having that non-inclusive attitude. And she sued and she lost. I forget what they're called in the UK, but the court that heard her case, she lost. They said that such an attitude has no place in a democratic society. Simply having an opinion that does not go along with what the government and the society wants you to believe will get you fired. And that is what happened to her. And we can see what's happening to J.K. Rowling because she spoke out about this. Our organization, Arlington Parent Coalition, we were deplatformed last year. CARE 2 was a petition platform that we had utilized to start a petition to ask the school board to delay the vote on this policy. That was all we were asking. We said, just delay it so that everyone's voices can be heard. Because we did a Freedom of Information Act request, and we found out that Arlington Public Schools had been in negotiations with this local transgender activism group since September of 2018. They had been working on this policy. Nobody knew it was happening. No other voices were included. And we found out because of that FOIA request that they even did not include us, APC, after we asked to be included. They said, yes, we'll invite you to any future meetings. Well, we found out there was a meeting between this activist group and APS school, and we were not invited. So we started this petition just to ask, hey, can you please delay this so that other voices can be heard? We got 150 signatures in the first 24 hours, and then Care First deleted our petition and said that we had violated their terms of service, and they never responded about what terms of service we violated. GoFundMe just terminated a crowdfunding campaign. Some parents in California have been raising money to put up billboards, and they put up a billboard saying puberty is not a medical condition. And they advertised Abigail Shire's book. She just came out with a book, Irreversible Damage, The Transgender Craze Seducing Our Daughters. Fantastic book for anyone who wants to know how this is affecting girls. Well, a group of parents put up this billboard, and they were crowdfunding for more, and GoFundMe canceled it and refunded everybody's contributions. So, yeah, lots of people are being silenced. Lots of people are being canceled. And it is completely antithetical to the First Amendment. It's completely a breach of religious freedom, of freedom of speech. And it's shocking to me, Andrew, that this is happening in my country, that this is happening in America, and that more people don't recognize what's going on.
Yeah, it reminds me of during the Cold War of Vaclav Havel in Czechoslovakia, later the president of the Czech Republic after the dissolution of Czechoslovakia into the Czech Republic and Slovakia. You know, he wrote a play where he pointing out the absurdity of communism, that in the play, an army had conquered a country, and these occupiers, they forced everyone to speak a language that didn't make any sense, and no one believed in. So, you had to go around saying things like, you know, the dictatorship of the proletariat, or the five-year plan, or, you know, collectivized agriculture and so forth, that now we have, as many have discussed in the United States and in the wider West, we have a cold civil war, that we have these ideological battles in our institutions, and that now we have a similar imposition of a type of a language, of a new speak and a new thought. Mm-hmm. You have to say these things, even though it's just total nonsense and no one believes in it.
Yeah, yeah, it's very correlated, a lot of correlation there. Yeah, the language has really been taken over, and, you know, with the pronouns or letting children, you know, make decisions about their medical care, that's being called freedom, you know, that's not what freedom is. Yeah, the language has definitely been co-opted.
Yeah, it strikes me too with these GSAs, these gay straight alliances, that, you know, why is a school promoting such sexual behavior, which actually has and gender behaviors, which, as you've indicated with transgenderism, but also with homosexual behavior, actually has a lot of harms, and there is actually a lot of destructive effects from such behavior. It's almost like, you know, why would a school have a smoking club or something and promote any desire of kids to go smoking? Has anyone made that analysis that, you know, this is just not productive behavior? Why is anyone promoting it?
Yeah. Oh gosh, where to begin? There's so many tentacles to this, and there's so many reasons why this is happening. The National Education Association, the NEA, has partnered with Planned Parenthood and with the HRC, the Human Rights Campaign. And this is not anything, this is not tinfoil hat conspiracy stuff. It's clearly out there. They're not hiding it. These are who their partners are. And the HRC, the Human Rights Campaign, that sounds like a lovely, you know, name, who's not for human rights, but this is another place the language has been co-opted. That is the funding and lobby arm of the LGBTQ community. Those two organizations are writing curricula. They are writing this beautiful packaged curricula for sex ed. Here's a lesson plan that you can use in English class that is inclusive, and it helps teach about this stuff using great books. And teachers are overworked. Teachers are exhausted. I used to teach. I'm still teaching and teaching now. Just one class with six kids in it, and it still takes a lot of time. If somebody comes to you and says, I have this beautiful, professional, fantastic lesson plan, it runs for, you know, 50 minutes, and it's all packaged and ready to go. Here's your PowerPoint presentation. Here's your handouts. Here's your worksheets. Here's your homework. That's a godsend for a teacher. And so the HRC and Planned Parenthood are writing this stuff, and they're giving it away for free. And saying, just come to our website, download all this stuff. And so the teachers are getting it, and they're using it because it's there and it's convenient. And Planned Parenthood has a horse in this race with over-sexualizing and hyper-sexualizing kids because they are an abortion provider. That's where they make a lot of money. The earlier children start having sex, the more abortions they will have. There was a former director of a Planned Parenthood organization who saw what was happening, left the organization, and is kind of a whistleblower, and has said, we had quotas for how many abortions we're supposed to perform each week. We were supposed to go into classes and talk about sexuality, not to discourage sexual activity, but to talk about how to have good sex. And how to have, protections, you know, use condoms and whatnot. But really, she said, we wanted girls to have their first abortion at 13. That's where they make their money. The HRC has political and financial reasons for wanting more and more people to not only accept being homosexual, but to become homosexual or to become transgender. You know, the more people you have in your club, the more power you have. And the NEA has partnered with them. They've got a wonderful group of kids just ready for the picking in the public school system. and that's who they're targeting.
Yeah, that sounds very disturbing. We have a couple of callers here. We at the end of the show, we like to bring in callers if they have any questions. Callers out there, do you have any questions you want to place? Hello?
Well, I have a statement. Yes.
Yes,
I was listening I'm calling from the Midwest, either Missouri or down in Louisiana.
Uh-huh.
And I'm highly conservative. I'm African-American. But parents have a right to choose the environment that their child is being educated in. And as far as this self-identity, we know that people, United States citizens, have civil rights that we should respect. But we don't have to accept their lifestyle, and they should not be allowed to force that upon, especially our children. And the lady is right with this new upsurge of self-identity that came along with the last president. And he not only done it in this country, but he done it abroad too. But I won't get into that. But you have to stand up and fight in order to prevent that. If not, they're going to take over your church. That's what they target for.
Well, you raised an interesting issue. Maybe Maria could discuss this. Is there, coming from an African-American background, Maria, are you seeing any differences? For example, it's often been noted that minorities, African-Americans or Latinos, are actually more conservative on these issues, and they indeed reject any analogy to the civil rights movement.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they're trying to co-opt the civil rights movement. Everybody seemingly to come up with these wild ideas and these new extreme expressions want to co-opt the civil rights movement.
Yeah,
and
so Maria, I want
to
ask you on what our caller here has brought in.
Yeah, they absolutely do. You're absolutely right about that. And it's disturbing and it really angers me to see that happening, that they are, just like the transgender movement hitched its wagon to the LGB movement, they both hitched to the civil rights movement. And where I find that problematic is that being Hispanic or being African American, that you can't change that. That's part of who you are. Everybody who meets you sees that. There's no way to hide that. Nobody looks at a person and knows you're LGB or you're TQ, and it is not the same thing. Those are not in something inherent to their very look, to their experience of humanness. And I think it's very deceptive and manipulative to claim that these are civil rights issues.
Yeah, and you know, you mentioned Maria the teachers' unions. How are the, this has been a topic that conservatives have brought up for a while. The National Education Association and the American Federation of Teachers, whose president Randy Weingarten herself is actually a lesbian. Are they just going all in on these agendas? Is there any dispute among these organizations about this? Any from members, any criticism of this kind of a push for these agendas in schools?
Well, I am not a member of the teachers union, but I met a woman who is the head of the conservative teachers caucus in the NEA. So there is a conservative teachers caucus among the NEA, and she and her caucus are very concerned about this and are pushing back. But from what I gather from her, they are in the minority, and a lot of the rest of the, at least at the administrative level of the NEA, they are very much on board with this. This is a significant drive by the NEA as a disciplinary reform. Their goals are no longer having to do with education, with academics, with kids, competing academically with the rest of the world. Their yearly goals have to do with social agendas. We want kids to be activists. We want kids to have this outlook. We want kids to have that outlook. And there are numbers of teachers who are not on board with that, but they're not being heard and definitely being pushed back on.
Well, we have another caller here. Let's see if we can close out with one quick question from him. Caller, do you have a question for Maria Kepler?
Okay, yeah. It's apparently socialism is been around in the schools for a few decades. How did it get so prevalent? Can anybody answer that question? In terms of
how did the LGBT agenda get so prevalent in the schools?
Well, it has, I think, from what I've seen and what I've read, it has been a long process of marketing and PR. And there is a book that I wish I could remember the title of. It was written by a marketer who laid out a strategy for how you make this agenda palatable to Americans, to the culture. I believe it was written in 1983, and I'm sorry I'm blanking on the name right now. But
I think you're talking about it was a 1990s book called After the Ball, I think it was, or was that it? There were two advertising executives, and they
that's the one.
Look, this is how we're going to market this agenda to America.
Yes, thank you, Andrew. That is it. And they laid out a marketing strategy, and it has been marketing, and it has been remarkably successful. One of the things that we discovered in Arlington Parent Coalition, we were meeting and we said, you know what, we need to get like-minded parents onto committees. We need to get them onto the counseling committee, onto the textbook committee, onto these decision-making bodies. And somebody in our group said, I don't want to spend all my evenings at meetings. I want to spend evenings at home having dinner with my family. And we thought about it and we said, you know what, our values, as many of us are conservatives, our values are family first. And we're going to spend our time with our families, with our kids. We're not going to volunteer for all these 8 million different committees. But then you have, like here in Fairfax County, which is our neighboring county, last year they ran school board elections, 10 qualified Republican candidates who were all family people with kids in the schools. None of them were elected, but a gay man recently moved to this area who has spent his career as a political strategist was elected to the Fairfax County School Board. So it has been a strategic agenda to accomplish this, and they've done a great job with it.
Yeah, strange. So this gay man, did he have any kids? Or, you know, it's very interesting why such a person wants to be on a school board.
Yeah, no kids. He and his partner moved here recently. To me, it has all the hallmarks of a plant. And in 2018, Virginia was flooded with money from liberal organizations, was just flooded with money before the elections, and they flipped the state. You know, they flipped Virginia from red to blue. And I think activities like that were a part of it.
Well, this is all very important and very disturbing. I think our listeners across the country and anywhere else who will tune into this podcast will find this is really an eye-opening episode. Maria Kepler from the Arlington Parent Coalition, we're glad that you've joined us here today for Conservative Casual Friday. And thank you very much. And for our listeners out there, we hope you'll tune in to another episode next Friday for Conservative Casual Friday with your show host here, Andrew Baird, where we will talk about the issues of the day for conservatives and others. Thank you very much, Maria Kepler, for joining us.
Thank you very much, Andrew.
Well, goodbye.